Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello, and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which reveals everything you ever needed to know about interiors and explains how to make it all really work for you in your home.
I'm Kate Watson-Smythe.
And I'm Sophie Robinson.
Well, here we are again. Nearly back to a new sort of normal, but still recording by remote from the duvet den.
Although things feel like they're beginning to get back to normal. For a start, the schools are back and some people are beginning to return to their offices.
And the new season means new collections are beginning to drop too.
Which is so exciting. Our sponsor, Neptune, has just launched its new Autumn Winter collection, and there are some gorgeous new pieces. I'm spying up a rather beautiful green sofa, and I have to say, across the new collection, green is having a very, very strong moment.
And there's a new paint colour to their collection, Move Over Saffron. This time it's olive green, and I am here for that.
To see that and the new furniture and textiles collection, visit neptune.com. Well, the temperature seems to have dropped about 10 degrees recently, but there's still a bit of a summer glow about this episode. Not only do we have a few design tales to share from our summer travels, but our guest interview comes straight from the glamorous island of Ibiza.
Yes, we'll be talking to Skin, singer, songwriter and DJ, best known for being the lead vocalist of the band Skunk Anansie. But what you maybe didn't know is that she actually studied interior design and is an interiors obsessive. We had a fascinating chat about how her distinct style translates from the world of rock into the world of cushions and paint.
But before that, anyone who follows Kate on Instagram, that's Mad About the House, by the way, will have been treated to some startling French hotels and stunning Italian converted olive mill, was it? Talk us through your design highlights of August.
Well, you know what? It was our first holiday without the children in 20 years. Part of it was, and it was our 20th wedding anniversary. So we drove through France to get to Italy. We took our time, and it was a bit of a sort of wedding anniversary road trip. So we stayed in a hotel on Lake Como on the way out, which was an amazing view of the lake, which I'd never been to. And then we rented this fantastic converted 15th century olive mill, which was, I did post that on Instagram. And there was lots of consternation because I posted a picture of the kitchen sink, which
yes,
may
I
not sound
that.
This kitchen sink made of Carrara marble with a little skirt in front of it.
And it was but why can you have it in a kitchen and not a bathroom? What's the difference?
I don't know. I tell you what. Well, maybe it was just seeing in that kitchen.
Yes.
It was lots of kind of marble and stone and vintage furniture. And actually, didn't we talk the other day about the new kitchen trend being for unfitted kitchens? Mm. And this was very much that kind of feel with, you know, just sort of vintage units put down and a big slab of kitchen sink and a curtain. It was heavenly.
So it's all a bit higgledy-piggledy. There were lots of different elements. And so the little curtain under the Carrara marble basin.
It was just really cool. And then on the way back, we stayed at this mad hotel called the Folie Douce in Chamonix, which is a big skiing area. And I've seen the Folie Douce bars. When you're skiing and you go past them, there's loads of loud music blaring out onto the slopes. There's people dancing on the tables. And we were a bit like, oh, not sure if that's going to work for us in a hotel environment. And there was a bit of dancing on the tables. There was a Earth,
Wind,
and Fire.
Oh, you didn't put that on Instagram. I'd like to have seen
There was an Earth, Wind, and Fire tribute band. There were people walking on stilts. And we were like, oh my God, we're too old for this. But what was incredible was it was really soundproof. So it's right under Mont Blanc. You could close your windows. You couldn't hear anything. You could just see the mountains. But my favourite bit, and you will have to refer back to my Instagram for this, was there was a pool, which there was this carpet leading to the pool, which was sort of woven with swimmers. It was
really graphic, isn't it? Like a very
really graphic.
Sort of almost 1950s, 60s, I would say, graphic.
It was all a bit Wes Anderson, which anybody who knows me knows that I love a bit of Wes Anderson. So,
well, I was looking at your Instagram while I was in France thinking it does all look really beautiful. But we took off en famille. We drove as well, partly because, you know, with the COVID and everything, I didn't fancy flying. But also my husband, Tom, who's a passionate member of Extinction Rebellion, doesn't want to fly anymore. So this was our first driving holiday and we drove to the Doi Doi. And I have to say, I really enjoyed the drive. I really enjoyed listening to music.
Yeah, I loved it too.
Taking in the views as we went. You know, it was a really nice part. It takes longer to get there for sure, but actually I arrived far more relaxed than if I'd been pushed around by EasyJet. So I can highly recommend a drive through Europe. And then I didn't share anything actually on my Instagram because I didn't feel my followers needed to see the water parks of France. That me
Fair
and
point.
My 9-year-old Arthur, we had loads of fun, but it was a lot of that. No beautiful Gigi hotels from me, I'm afraid, on this particular trip.
Well, I tell you what, it was lovely. And now we're back and, you know, I do definitely feel inspired by my travels, but ordinarily at this time of year, we'd be drawing inspiration from the trade shows and the trend reports. And obviously, it's all a bit different this year.
Well, yeah, exactly. We can't get out and about to LDF and Decorex and Focus and all those great London shows that we'd usually be looking forward to. And of course, none of that is happening. So for our next topic, we wanted to delve a bit deeper into the business of trends. Are they dead forever? And is that perhaps a good thing?
But before we get into that, which is, I think, a fascinating topic, there is one bit of news, which is the announcement of the Dulux Colour of the Year. Now, this is a hotly anticipated announcement every year. I am wrong. Every single year, I never get this right. And by the time you listen to this, it will have been announced. Now, we're recording slightly before that announcement. So we've had to sign non-disclosure agreements. We've agreed to embargoes, but we have the information. And are you ready for this? The colour is called Brave Ground.
And it's
Sophie,
brown.
It's a bit brown.
You're loving it. Look at your face.
Well,
I can see you via Zoom and your face. Oh my God, Cheshire Cat doesn't even cover how particularly smug and thrilled you are at how much this is hurting me right now. That, yeah, the big colour for 2021 is beige, isn't it?
Well, you can call it beige. I'm going to just read you here from the press release. It is a warm and grounding neutral shade that will enable people to draw on the strength of nature to help them find the courage to embrace the future. And we could do with a bit of that, even if it is brown.
Yeah, no, for sure. To be honest, in terms of the meaning of colour, the psychology of colour, this is no big surprise. Any shade of brown is a deeply grounding colour. Like, it's the colour of the earth, isn't it? It's literally the thing we plant our feet on that also, you know, nourishes growth and all those kinds of things. So, yes, it's a very positive message.
Well, one thing I will say, I'm always fascinated by the psychology behind it. And of course, you spoke in the last series to Marianne Shillingford, the creative director of Dulux. And I remember you asked her, you know, is that colour going to change because we've been locked in our homes for 5 months? And she said that the colour was a sort of reflection of what's going on in the world at large. But she did send us through one quote, which I think is really true. And she said, "The colours on our walls are the backdrop to how we live our life. For many of us, lockdown has served to emphasise how important our home environment has become, as it's been the place where we work and learn and relax. It can lift us up, nurture us and comfort us. And as we continue to live through uncertain times, in 2021, the warm and grounding tones of Brave Ground will allow us to find certainty in the strength from the ground beneath our feet." So, you know, it's a good place to start from. But don't worry, Sophie, because they, as ever, do a series of colour palettes to go around that. And I know Kate, that one of them is full of pinks and blues and greens.
I'm not worried. I'm not worried. I'm not.
Because you're just going to ignore it.
No. Yes, of course I am. Of course I am. There's going to be no brown walls in my home, for goodness sake. I'm going to continue with my electric blues and my bubblegum pinks and my neon and my canary yellows in my happy home, because essentially it's really important that you find the colours that resonate with you. So I would say the headline coming out of lockdown, the headline coming out of this pandemic, the headline of moving forward into our homes have never been more important. They're the place that absolutely make us feel our best and build us up and push us back up into the world again, is to find the colours that you really love. And for me, it ain't Brave Ground. And that's okay. But it's not to say that that's not a great colour for lots of people.
I think it could be a really good neutral. It looks like a really good warm neutral. But actually,
you're going to try and get me on board with this now, saying it goes nicely with pink and green.
But,
and
well, it, yeah, and it does go nicely with pink and green and all sorts of pinks and greens. But it does bring us back to our wider topic of whether trends are irrelevant, whether the fact that we've been at home in lockdown for so many months, unable to see new trends, does that mean now that we don't need to know what the trends are or what the new colours are, because we're much more confident about who we are in our own homes and our decorating choices?
You know, the word I'm picking out from what you've just said is confident. People have the confidence. Not everybody does, do they? And yeah. I think that's why they look to the magazines, the shop windows, the blogs, the trend forecasters to help them formulate what they think they should be doing. But it is everybody's, I think, on quite wobbly ground now as well, because I know one of the things that's happened to me coming out of lockdown is it's really helped me slow down and reevaluate lots of my principles in life, not just how my home feels, but everything. One of the positive things is it's made me take stock of a lot. And I was somebody who traveled through life at 110 miles an hour. And I think stopping and really working out what it is you love about your home is really important. And trends, in a way, I think helped us fast track that. It's like, oh, this is in, I'll do that. That's in, yeah, I'll do that. And actually, by taking our foot off that very fast-paced, trend-forecasted pace, if you like, we all just slow down a little bit. Because let's not forget, and this is maybe a bit cynical, but I think a lot of trends forecasting is to help brands sell us more stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? And I think, to come back to the word confidence, I think we perhaps have got more confidence over time, or at least sometimes the starting point for working out what you like is really understanding what you don't like, so that you can sort of rule out a whole load of that. But I kind of miss that, walking down the high street and seeing, certainly in clothes shops, what's in the window. Because, you know, when it starts on the catwalk, it comes to the cushions. But that notion of you seeing lots of colours, the same sorts of colours in the high street windows. And we're not seeing that. You know, when you go onto a website to shop online, you don't get a sense of the overall colour. You know, you look for mugs or you look for blankets. You just get all the blankets. You don't get that colour coordinated
sense. It's the beautiful
sense.
Curation, isn't it? It's the fact that somebody, yeah, a visual merchandiser, somebody highly skilled with colour palettes, has put together these collections, and even how they've put them on the rails or they've put them in their window displays or the shop display shows you how things work together. And subliminally, we might not even realise it, but they're helping us put their collection, of be it clothes or cushions, it works for both, together. And if you're not getting out in the shops, you know, where are you looking? However, we know where we're looking. It is all online. And I think you highlight a really interesting point, actually, that a lot of interior design websites is just like, here is a page of cutout mugs, here's a page of cutout lamps, here's a page of cutout sideboards. And you don't quite get that room set setting that helps you put it all together. And maybe that's where things need to move. However, it all goes on places like Instagram, doesn't it?
Well, that's exactly it. I wonder if that's where, you know, the trends will now come from. Whether, would we call it a micro trend? I mean, you mentioned one, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about trends and where I get my... because essentially, we're talking inspiration. For me, the reason I get so excited about trends is like, oh, show me something new, show me something exciting, show me a reinvention. Because this is all, it's all cyclical. I mean, you know... Brave Ground from Dulux, quite frankly, I feel like that's very 1990s, that whole sort of, I mean, Kelly Hoppen and her taupe, she's going to be skipping around the block. But what was interesting was looking at trends that I've seen emerge on Instagram. So, for example, cottagecore, we talked about it in a recent podcast.
Yes, it's suddenly massive, isn't it, that? And that's not come from trend forecasters.
I don't think so.
That's been entirely generated sort of by the people for the people.
Yeah, from a group of essentially young women, I think. Yeah. Just really loving this cottagecore style, this very old-fashioned, nostalgic, chintzy country look. And it's become massive. So, you know, who's to say that we won't create our own little micro trends? Because essentially we're all just trying to inspire one another. And I get it, cottagecore might not be for everybody. I can't see you rocking the cottagecore anytime soon. But it's all about finding that thing that resonates with you. And you think, oh yeah, that's a little bit of me. I love that. And then just following your heart.
And I've always said, and we've always said, both on our blogs and on the podcast, that, you know, you shouldn't slavishly follow trends. You do need to identify if that's a trend you want. But it's very often been a sort of starting point, hasn't it? And I feel that, you know, you could use a trend as a bit of guidance, as a starting point, and then adapt it to your own style. But if we don't have that starting point anymore, you know, if we don't have reports coming back from Maison and Milan and LDF saying, you know, oh, this year it's all about curves, we have to look to ourselves and our own style and you know, really work out what it is we like and adopt it. So I think it's good, maybe, if the trend is dead.
Or if it, you know, I think there's, yes. Gosh, that was quite a headline. The trend
is
dead.
Wasn't it?
But I'd say if it's not dead, it's definitely...
Is it having a lie down?
It's having a lie down. It's slowing down, isn't it? And I think, you know, I've talked about myself slowing down, but everything's slowing down. For example, I'm trying to get my house finished at the moment. I want to have it photographed. And there's just loads of unfinished bits and bobs and I need to source some lights and a sideboard. And what I'm realising is if I'm sourcing anything new, there's real production problems right now because during COVID and the lockdown,
all
the factories were closed and it's really hard to get hold of not just interior products, but also building products have been really affected. So we can't just get that sort of fast shopping fix. So what I'm doing, for example, is... which I love to do anyway, but I'm having to do even more of it, is source vintage and secondhand pieces because they're there and I kind of need them now. I'm going to Ardingly Antiques Market and I've got a whole shopping list, pair of armchairs, a sideboard, some wall lights, a chandelier. Like I've got this huge
Brilliant.
List. And rather than just going to my online places where I knew I would normally source that, so I think as well, this end to fast fashion perhaps has been forced onto us because of the pandemic, but this also feeds into a more slow, organic way of decorating, a more sustainable way of decorating, which is going to still be a big trend, right? I can't see that conversation.
No, and I mean, I wrote at the beginning of the year about how, you know, the so-called brown furniture was coming back into fashion and becoming more popular again, and which is, you know, it's got to be a good thing. As you say, it's sustainable. You're saving it from landfill. You know, we've spoken before about how you can reupholster it or paint it or customise it or leave it as it is. So, yeah, in a way, maybe this is a good thing that's coming out. Maybe it will slow down or give fast fashion a bit of a punch in the face and we'll go back to... yeah, more sustainable and looking for things we really want. And, you know, also investing in things we really want and we really want to keep them. So there's not that kind of fast turnover.
So yeah, and also you can save so much money, can't you, by buying vintage pieces, which would arguably maybe allow you to save a bit more in the pot for a bespoke piece, be that from an artist or an artisan, a craftsperson, even your local carpenter. The point is you're having something made for you, which supersedes any trend.
Absolutely right.
Of course, trends or no trends, Kate and I remain broadcasting our own unique take on interiors. So do come and find us on Instagram, where I'm Sophie Robinson Interiors and she is Mad About the House. And of course, the Facebook group never ceases to inspire. Join the literally thousands of interiors obsessives chatting away on there at the Great Indoors Facebook group.
Now, next up is my chat with Skin. Born to Jamaican parents who moved to the UK as part of the Windrush generation, she grew up in Brixton, where her granddad ran a basement nightclub and there was, she says, always music and rum. She would go on to sing Happy Birthday to Nelson Mandela and duet with Pavarotti in front of the Dalai Lama. Then in 1999, she became the first black female to headline Glastonbury. Her trademark shaven head and hugely distinctive aesthetic sense are well known. But perhaps less well known is that she studied interior architecture and computing at Teesside University in Middlesbrough, where she was as well the first black woman on her course. And that radical rock style has always carried over in her homes. She's just written a book called It Takes Blood and Guts, which is published on the 24th of September. And I spoke to her just this morning, me in the glamorous party hotspot of my bedroom in North London, and she, well, in Ibiza.
In Ibiza, it's all about being outdoors. I mean, you spend, I would say, 80% of your daytime and your nighttime outdoors. So I have an old finca here, which is like a British, I think you call it cottage in England. And it's very, very small. It's just three bedrooms, a big kind of lounge, open space kind of kitchen area. And then I have like about two or three big spaces outdoors. It's a tiny cottage and a lot of land, and I'm in the middle of the forest. Basically, this house has kind of got a bit of a two-tone feeling because at the moment, indoors, I'm in this air-conditioned room. It's very modern. It's very kind of white and clean lines and simple furniture and everything. And then outside, it just looks like an old cottage like that belongs to like an 80-year-old because I like the idea of my house blending into the background and blending into the hill and the countryside. But once you step through the door, it gets very high-tech. So it's like a juxtaposition of two things.
Well, you mentioned that in your book, actually, how with your music, you often like a contrast between the sort of louder music and the perhaps softer sense of the lyrics or the poetry. And you talk about, you know, salt and sweet caramel. So I did want to ask you, do you carry that sort of trend over into your interior design style?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I have this feeling that you don't have to stick to one thing all of the time. You can actually be interested in different styles and different things at the same time. It's all about how you do it. So you can have a modern interior, but with a, you know, vintage kind of looking outside, as long as the kind of the way you pass through the spaces works quite well. I've kept all of the old features inside, so I haven't squared it off. I haven't squared off all the windows and squared off the doors. I haven't lost the old wooden beam. I've lost the floor because the terracotta floor tiles are lovely for outside, but inside I think it gets a little bit too ye olde-y. And I've kind of gone for furniture that is a bit indoors, outdoorsy, but not super hyper modern because I don't want this. I think in Ibiza there's a lot of places, a lot of villas, a lot of beautiful houses, and it all can be a bit kind of like, it's a bit too Miami. I think I wanted to keep the authenticity of being in Ibiza and it being a cottage lifestyle and not being making my house into like an interior of a disco or something like that.
I'm interested you talk about it being a cottage. There's a trend at the moment called cottage core, which has its own hashtag, and it's a sort of maximalist, and it's a little bit chintzy, I imagine, perhaps for you. But also there's another trend coming through from a couple of the black interior designers who are adapting it to what they call Jamaican Nan cottage core. And that is a style which is, again, quite, there we go, quite maximalist. So yeah. I'm thinking of No Feature Walls, Laura, who has a lot of William Morris prints and Kemi cottage noir. And she brings in sort of lots of African prints and layers them. And running through it is a sense of, they would say, their Jamaican nan, very house proud, quite a lot of stuff and maximalism. And obviously, you must have had a Jamaican nan. I wonder if you have any influence from growing up that, you know, has influencing your interior design now.
I love that kind of style, actually. I think it's really, really fun. I, for myself, have a little bit more, I'm like second generation British. So I think I've got a little bit of everything. So I'm not a maximalist at all. I kind of like only have things there that are useful and are doing something and that serve me visually or emotionally or functionally. But at the same time, one of the things I do like is my mum always had these mass-produced 1950s prints. So I actually sought out and found the dove with the two naked people standing underneath it because that's just really, it's just so cliche and it's so over the top. I also have some flying ducks because I just think it's hilarious.
Flying ducks on the wall amongst all these cool white minimal interiors. Talk to me about that.
It's just the English in me. They're so British. It's just hilarious to walk into this high-tech, sophisticated interior and have flying ducks on the wall. They are original 1950s first edition flying ducks. I actually had to research and go on the internet and found them on eBay. They just make me laugh. I just think it's very Arthur Scargill, very kind of Northern European, Middlesbrough, Teesside, flying ducks on the wall. It just makes me giggle and nobody else gets it but me, and that's fine.
Fantastic. I love the sound of that. Might have to go on eBay later when we finish talking. And I just want to come back to one more, your childhood home, when you moved to Tulse Hill. And it was the first time you had your own bedroom. And you and I are exactly the same age. And I had such a jolt of recognition. You wrote about having Piero wallpaper and curtains. And I remember that Piero face so well. Exactly.
And lampshades. Oh, it was horrendous. And I loved that period. Remember that period? It was great. And it wasn't until, like, my mum went out very kindly and bought all this stuff and we put it all together. And I looked around and it just looked like Pro just vomited around my room, like, you know, like I there was no money to change it all. I couldn't suddenly turn to mum and go, oh, I don't like it. Let's do something else. I just had to live in it. Yeah, God, remember that? I went crazy for that. I think it was just my first time I'd actually had any choice in what my environment was going to look like. And I went for this uniform one thing. And boy, did you really learn a lesson from that. I learned that lesson for the rest of my life because anytime I feel myself falling into just doing one thing, I'm like, no, remember Piero.
And that, yes, it was quite a sort of mournful thing to be staring at you for 3 years as well. You, again, mention in the book that you were friends with Alexander McQueen. You've worn a lot of his clothes. You're known for your very distinctive, fantastic sense of fashion. Do you see a link between how you dress and how you decorate?
I think there's a really strong link about how I walk down the street and how I decorate, because it's really about personality and feeling and character and really just making sure it's you and authentic. I mean, everyone always says they walk into one of my houses and they know it's me, they know it's my house. And there's kind of things that I always buy the same knives, for instance, and I always buy the same bins because all this traveling, I see what works and I see what doesn't work. So, I mean, I think that clothes-wise, I like things to kind of be, make me feel good with a twist. So I like Comme des Garçons. I love McQueen because he did that. He's a wonderful designer. I mean, taking something beautiful and classic, but giving it a twist and giving it an inch and making it yours. I think I've always got to put my thing onto it, my weirdness into it.
I wanted to talk also, you're well known for your activism. And for you, actually, that started quite young. You worked in the home furnishings department of BHS, was one of your first jobs.
In Oxford Street, yeah.
in Oxford Street. And I believe you were already telling them that, you know, the political stance they should have been taking.
Well, it was just really weird. I mean, I think at that point in time, it was a really kind of pivotal moment. It was really changing around the world. People were really beginning to understand what apartheid actually meant on a day-to-day level for Black people in South Africa. And it really affected me. I just couldn't believe that people could behave like that in a very naive, very idealistic way. I mean, I was like 15 years old. And then I also believe that maybe they just didn't understand or they didn't know that they were selling South African goods and what that meant. And if I just explained it to them or I just wouldn't ask them, then they would go, oh, God, of course. Yeah, you know, well, stop buying South African goods. You're so right. It's really awful what's happening to those Black people in South Africa. I mean, I really thought that, you know, and I naively went and talked to the manager and they all just looked at me. And so, yeah, that job didn't last much longer after that. I mean, I was definitely on the naughty list after that. You know, they didn't stop selling South African goods. They just moved me to a different place where I didn't have to touch them. You know, they made it about me being the one that they had to change, not changing their own behaviour, I realised, as an adult. And that's what was happening.
We've spoken on this podcast before about diversity. And one of the things that came through again and again was that if you don't see yourself, it's very difficult to put yourself into that career. From your point of view, as the first Black woman on your course, you were never going to see yourself. So would you have sort of advice for people coming through now about have the courage to go for it, even if you don't see yourself? And
I mean, I think seeing myself was never my thing. I was never trying to see somebody else doing it. I was just doing stuff anyway. And that would always be my advice. And like, it's great if you see yourself, but if you don't see yourself, do it anyway. I think in some ways, we need to go into areas where we're not seen and make ourselves seen. So I think it's wonderful to be an example and to be an inspiration, but it's also really important to be the one, the first one to do it and to forge ahead and do it anyway and not let the fact that you don't see yourself get in your way or not let other people think that you can't do something just because there's nobody like you has done it before.
So you say in the book, Skin, that there was a point where you were sort of living out of suitcases in hotels for about 3 years. Is there now a sort of core element that means you're home now?
It's interesting. Actually, that's a really good question because I think as a touring musician, you're always trying to make everywhere feel a little bit home. So you carry some items with you so that, okay, I'm in this hotel for 4 days. I'm going to take this out of my suitcase and that's going to be a little bit more homely to me. And I think that there's part of myself that's kind of always living in the suitcase. So I think that for me, that being feeling at home and having a house is a much more spiritual, emotional thing than it would be to most people because I tour so much and because I'm always, always, always traveling. I think that for the last part of my life, I had houses but not a home. I did actually start to question what's the difference between a house and a home. And I think the only place that really feels homely is actually my house in Ibiza because it's the only house I've owned for a long period of time. And it's the only place that I've really had the same things around me for a very long period of time. I have things in my house in Ibiza, like my knives. I have a very beautiful set of very sharp knives. We cook a lot. Me and my partner, we cook a hell of a lot. They're 20 years old and I've had them the whole time I've been here. And so that feels much more homely to me than would be like a photograph of somebody I love or something like that, because I don't really have many of those around the place.
I read that, talking of suitcases, you were supposed to be going on tour in 2020.
Yeah.
What's the plan with that now?
I think we're going to reschedule for next year. I mean, we were supposed to spend a lot of time touring, doing Glastonbury, playing with Grace Jones at Meltdown, a British tour, a European tour. And obviously all of that has shifted. So hopefully that's all going to happen next year.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Wow, what a truly inspirational woman. And I personally love her design philosophy that your home should make you laugh, give you joy, and flying ducks on the wall. Absolutely brilliant.
I'm off to Google some flying ducks. Yes. Look out for the madhouse walls. The ducks are coming.
Now, time for the style surgery. And we've had a question from Laura Roder, who left it on our Facebook page. She says, "Hi all, I'm wondering if anyone here has done any online interior design classes. I was all registered for Abigail Ahern's in-person class in London, but of course it was cancelled. Sad face emoji. Honestly, interiors are such an in-person thing. I've never been keen to do a class online, but now that in-person seems cancelled forever, I think I'd like to try and give one a try. I'm looking to get better at decorating my own house. I find the trouble I have is visualising what will work together and figuring out what to add or subtract to a room to make it work. My rooms keep ending up looking kind of empty or unfinished." Okay.
Well, Sophie, Sophie Robinson, I wondered what attracted you to the question about whether there were any online interior design courses.
I can't
what I will say, is that there are a lot more now than there were a few months ago. I think that's really focused people's minds, hasn't it? So obviously, I mean, I think you might have done one.
I
should we just skate over that?
One or two online courses, hugely popular, brilliant, well thought out, fantastically executed online courses. Yeah, that might I want to do. I can't believe it. Actually, I never looked at the comments. I hope somebody gave me a plug. I'm sure they will have done. But yes, I did. I launched my first online course in June 2019. It was called Be Your Own Interior Designer. And actually, Laura, it was to answer your very question. I was seeing that I was getting so many DMs through Instagram and emails from people asking me, oh, my room feels a bit unfinished or empty. How do I do this? Oh, I've got a red sofa. I don't know what goes with it. Or I've just decorated my house grey. Now, what colour shall I add to it? And I was just thinking, whoa, 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 people. All these questions that you're asking are just in isolation. And there is a whole design process that you can follow, which will help you answer your own questions. Because quite frankly, I don't have time for, I think at the last look, 138,000 Instagram followers. I can't do one-on-one consultations through my DMs. So I thought that's why I did an online course, was just to help answer everybody's questions. But I think, yes, increasingly, again, because of recent events and the pandemic and everything, we are spending more time online and more people are launching courses. In fact, Abigail Ahern has a very good online masterclass, and Rita Konig's course as well, I've had a look at, is also brilliant.
And Lucy Goff, the stylist, interior stylist, has done one which is called Be Your Own Interior Stylist. So it's not, it's a sort of take on it, isn't it? Perhaps when you've done the decoration and putting the room together.
Oh, I'd argue actually Lucy's course is if you want to be a professional interior stylist. So quite different. So this is the grey area. So some courses are helping professionals. So Lucy Goff's very brilliant course is helping people who want to train to be an interior stylist like her, someone who does photo shoots for all the big brands and magazines and stuff like that. Emily Henson, who's a fantastic interiors author, we've reviewed her books here on the podcast, one of my favourites, Be Bold, but she's done many others.
Love that book.
She's just launched an online course on how to become an interiors author.
Why didn't I think of that? But what's interesting is I think there's still a lot of people that, you know, they don't want to buy a big piece of furniture online because they want to touch it and they want to feel it. And yet during the pandemic, they've had to get more confident with that. And I think that notion of becoming more confident online is spilling over into classes. And obviously, I've had a little look at your course. I'm not going to say I've completed it yet, but, you know, the idea is that I think the early courses were perhaps restricted to a sort of a sheet you could download and read in your own time.
Like an e-book.
But they've become much more sophisticated now. And I mean, you have bits of film and you have photograph and you can walk around spaces. So I think, you know, perhaps Laura should know that an online course now is a very different beast from what it was perhaps a year ago.
Like you say, it's a really rich learning experience. And I think the thing about if you're teaching something like interior design, it has to be hugely visual. So I produce a lot of photography content, a lot of video content to make sure that you're really seeing what it is that I'm, you know, the knowledge that I'm trying to impart. Also with my courses, and I know Abigail's and Rita's, we'll put all links of these in the show notes. They're courses that are designed to help the homeowner. So they're not going to help you become a professional. They're going to help you do up your own house. And I think this is really important to know the difference when you're looking for courses, because if you put interior design online course into Google, I actually ran out all the pages off of being a professional. So from the Interior Design Institute, from KLC, from Inchbald, all those big interior design schools. Whereas if you're training with an interior designer like myself, it's just me sharing with you my methodology, how I go about things, my take on things, my tried and tested recipe, if you like. So the next course that I'm launching that comes out on the 8th of October, oh, you're going to love this one, Kate. It's called Brave, Bold and Beautiful Interiors. It's going to be no brown in it. There's no neutrals here. I'm sorry. It's like, if you love neutrals, you bought the wrong course. It's all about...
I think I might have to do an online course all about how to decorate with neutrals, because Abigail's Ahern is all really dark colours. Yours is all really bright colours. I think I've just spotted a gap in the market.
Oh, we'd love you to do an online course. It'd be amazing. So it's all about going to be my particular look. Clashing pattern, how to use contrasting colour, bold focal points, lots of styling tips in there. So that's sort of going along with my the colour psychology course as well that I did, and also the creative process. So I'm trying to create a little suite, if you like, of courses that will cover off every little thing you might want to know about doing up your home.
When you finish plugging yourself.
No, I'm done. I'm plugged.
Oh, you're done. No, all I was going to say for Laura was that the sort of point is there is a lot more choice of online course around now. So, you know, have a look and try and find the designer or the teacher that you think might most resonate with you, because you're not just restricted to one course now. There's lots more, and they are all getting more sophisticated and more able to teach you things via that remote online process. Actually, Sophie, we do have one comment. You say you didn't check. I'm not sure if I believe you, but Gail Angus said she's done your course and loved it. So there you go. And she said she'd also done one of Abigail Ahern's in-person days and thought both were good. She says, I teach online education, career planning, and it really is a great option for courses like this because it gives you time to digest and reflect and obviously share with an online community. I think that's a really key point. You know, if you're doing evening classes, you've got to go every Monday at 7 or you've missed it. Whereas if you're doing it online, you can do it in your own time. You can do it from wherever you are in the world. And that flexibility, I think, is a really key point. And Gail says she did the course as she was planning her open plan living and kitchen room, and it gave her the confidence to pull it all together and taught her to use Pinterest properly. So there we go. Worth a look at the online course world. So I hope that helped, Laura. Do keep sending in your style surgery dilemmas. Just email us on thegreatindoorspod@gmail.com.
There will be links and pics and all manner of extra goodies on our blogs, sophierobinson.co.uk and madaboutthehouse.com. And do give us a little review on your podcast app if you can. I'd like to say a very special thanks to KTB86, whose review says, I'm in the process of buying a new build and thought I should look for some interiors inspiration. Enter the Great Indoors podcast. I've gobbled down all episodes in under 2 weeks. What could have been a grey box will now undoubtedly be far more inspiring. I've got ideas coming out of my ears now. Thank you. Wow, Katie, that is more than 50 shows in under 2 weeks. We are truly touched, and best of luck with the new house.
I can't believe we've done 50 shows. Amazing. Huge thanks also to our sponsors Neptune and to our producer Kate Taylor of Feast Collective.
And next time, after almost two series inside the duvet den, Kate and I are finally getting unleashed. We're allowed out and we're going to be doing a house tour of the fabulously stylish author and food columnist Skye McAlpine. So until then, we'll see you in the great indoors.